Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast, a podcast channel here on the New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkar, and more importantly, I have the pleasure today of welcoming three guests to the podcast to discuss a really fascinating open access initiative. And my guests today are Drs. Erica Buffelli, Alexander Vanderhaven, and Michael Salzberg. Michael Salzberg, we're actually welcoming back to the podcast. He was recently on to cover his work. So welcome all to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So religious minorities online, what is this all about?
But he seems to be eager to take the route. That's when you're not sitting in the same room and you feel you might talk into someone else, as it were. Religious minorities is of course, a very common concept, in politics, in international relations, in social or political discourse, or whatsoever. But surprisingly, religious minorities as a concept and as a research topic has not really been addressed that prominently as we had expected it to be. And so we thought that the time was ripe to do something about it. And of course, there are tons of books about specific groups or tradition that you might call religious minorities because, for example, they don't constitute the demographic or numerical majority in a specific country. So they might even be put on the library shelf with the label religious minorities on it, but there was, to our knowledge, not really an academic resource that tries to systematize, theorize, and analyze this phenomenon in a coherent manner. So that's what we started out to do a couple of years ago. And the first, the database, the website, the publication was launched in July 23, we have been updating it and adding new articles twice since that.
What sparked, certainly it's a fascinating and timely project, but, what sparked this project? You know, how did this come about?
Should I pick this up? So I think the conversation started in 2019, when Michael and us was part of a project of the Center of Advanced Studies in Oslo. So Michael was one of the leader of that project. It was about demise of religion, that was looking at how religion ends. And during the conversation and the reading we were doing for that project, we started looking more and more at the issue about religious minority. There was a common interest between the two of us. And I was at the time just started a research project that was looking at the idea of minority or the concept of minority and religion in the UK and in Japan. It was a collaborative project with colleagues in Japan. And then I think it's evolved from there. And then we know what's happened in 2020 and 2021. So the initial idea that we had about running in-person workshop to start discussing the concept and reading around it couldn't happen because of the pandemic. So we also decided that we needed someone else to be on board with us on this project. And it's when we thought that Alex was the perfect person for that. And as Michael was saying, when we started looking at the literature available or starting doing quite a lot of readings together on the topic, we realized that the usual edited volume format would not be enough to do what we wanted to do. We wanted to be, have a much a more flexible type of publication that would allows us to explore the topic much more broader, because the one volume, edited volume, would have been restricted quite a lot the number of chapter we could include. And it would have been proven very limiting in a sense, where one of the idea was to try to explore the concept of religious minority for as many as possible angle we could. And then is where we start in thinking about the possible online, longer term open access project.
Yeah, a number of fascinating threads. I'll actually start with the last thing you said, because increasingly we're seeing more discussion, certainly on the podcast and in the field at large, pertaining to open access, the open access enterprise. It's the impetus behind it, the need for it, the viability of it. And do you want to say a little bit about that dimension of the project, the open access piece?
Shall I pitch in there? It's just because it's fantastic. We will have scholarship that will be available to everybody, so not just so people have access through digital resources to universities, but students, scholars, everybody. So it also can be very quickly used on easily used on syllabi for universities without many complications. So we just thought this would be really good for accessibility, because it's supposed to be a really an important resource on the subject. So therefore it should be available.
If I can add a couple of points, of course, it's the audience that we had in mind. So try to reach an audience that was outside academia as well. But also in terms of we are trying to have a broader diversity of collaborator. And we are aware that access to online journal or to expensive edited volume varies differently and depending on university and resources. So that was the other motivation. And I think another point on this is that we are also implementing a more transparent peer review process for this project. Which it was part of this discussion of open access and open research approach. So we are also disclosing the name of the author to reviewer, but also asking the reviewer to disclose their name to the authors. We leave them the choice, but we invite them to have a full transparent review process for the articles as well.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, both of those sound inviting. In particular, the open access dimension, because clearly cost is a factor for many in many vocations and many places in the world. And in this time and age, I mean, we're not quite there with academic publishing, but individuals really anticipate, expect, information available instantly for download. And so academic publishing is slowly catching up, I think. And so it's great to see initiatives such as this. Just one small question. We'll talk a little bit later about submissions and who might like to contribute to this, but is any of the cost of open access borne by the authors or the contributors, or is this entirely free of charge?
For the authors, it's entirely free. We're fortunate to get a grant from the Center of Advanced Studies, where the project was born, and the grant was then supplemented by the University of Manchester, where Erica works, and the University of Bergen in Norway, where Alex and I, that is Michael, work.
Excellent.
Yeah, maybe we could pick up the thread where Erica went with the comment on the dissatisfaction with typical edited volumes, because indeed there are some edited volumes that carry religious minorities in the title, but we found that they were basically often very much a sammelsurium of case studies. And probably if you, Raj, would announce on your podcast that you are going to put together a book on religious minorities, and whoever wants to contribute is invited to submit a proposal, probably you'd end up with 1,000 of them. Because basically everyone can kind of package one's case as a minority thing. What we were missing was literature that was more concept and theory driven. And that is also why we started the publication with an article that we co-wrote on religious minorities from a conceptual perspective. And we then divided the project into three main sections that each of us has one to be in charge of. And my section, for example, deals with countries. So this will be a series of, or is an emerging and evolving series of country portrayals in terms of their history, their legal frameworks, their kind of cultural baggage, their religious landscape seen from a religious minorities perspective. And so far we have published articles on Brazil and Ethiopia, on Russia and on China and Taiwan. And I think all these cases again make the importance of open access publication quite clear, because the publication then is accessible from Ethiopia, from China, from Russia, and from Brazil. So in a way, that is the global kind of outreach that we are looking for. And yeah, maybe Erica, you want to say something about your section?
The section I'm more overseeing, although most of the decisions are usually taken together with the other three editors. We work very closely together in this project, is the section called Communities. That it's been the one that it was, we discussed it quite a lot, the criteria about selecting the entries to include, because it can grow exponentially. So the selection is based on size and relevance, but also presence across different country of this community, but also their relevance to the discussion of the concept of religious minority. This is one of the other important criteria that we are using to select these groups. So far we had, and this section collection include more specific organizations, such as, for example, the Church of Scientology, but also larger topic or broader topic like Africa diaspora religion, for example. And others, entries that's already been published are the one on Jehovah's Witnesses and Baha'is. Some of the one that's been already been published in this and Zoroastrian minorities, again, is part of this section. So we call them communities rather than groups or organization because it's a more inclusive term. And Alex is in charge of the third session.
Sure. So the theme section was actually a section that we were mostly fearful of because academics tend to be highly specialized. So we were afraid that we would not find people who would be able to write more general articles, but it actually, this was proven absolutely wrong. And we already received some fantastic articles on specific themes that are important in our modest views to the study of religious minorities. So for instance, the theme of discrimination, which is quite a logical one, religious minorities and the law, religious minorities risk and resource, but also very much like how religious minorities are being seen. We have, for instance, an article on exotification. We have an article on migration, religious minorities and international relations. So themes that we also, while working and developing our ideas, what are religious minorities and what themes are important, we started to find important. Another thing, for instance, the city and religious minorities, gender and sexuality, the theme of recognition is very important. And then last but not least, also an important theme is food and religious minorities. So specific things that came up, and we for some reason found excellent authors to write broad theoretical articles on it, often also by, while introducing it very broadly, but also then using one or two case studies often.
Right. And the hope is then that the three sections kind of supplement and speak to each other. When you have a certain group in a certain country, this is often related to a specific theme. These three sections are not just parallel, but they are interactive. At least that is the hope. And in that way, it's a very dynamic publication.
Fascinating. So what sorts of contributions might you welcome or be looking for? Would they pertain perhaps to particular themes? Theorization, particular settings, you know, are you looking for contributions? How might folks contribute if interested?
I think we're quite exclusive. We tend to invite authors.
I think it's more because we want to shape this project in a certain way. So far, all our contribution has been invited contribution, but we have been approached by some author, and then we had meeting with them and discussion about how to shape their entries to fit the project. Because it's what we're asking the author is, we're not asking for research article, because this is not what the project is about, but at the same time, they are not overviews. So we want them to write this article, we keep in the angle of a minority, a religious minority in mind. So when I discuss with the author in my session about the article in the community, is not just an overview of an introduction to that community, but it needs to be done from the angle of religious minority, of the concept of minority. So especially for the team section, we came up with quite a new team also while we were doing our reading, and also realizing that there were nothing written on some topics. So then we spent quite a lot of time to look for the right author. Which and we also want a balance, as I mentioned at the beginning, of geographical distribution with seniority of authors. So we usually spend quite a lot of time, and we consult with the editorial, the extended editorial board, about potential author. But the vast majority of our entry so far has been commissioned, so we didn't do any open call.
Right, but your question, Raj, is really brilliant, because that is also a very new experience for me as an editor, to work with a publication that is ongoing. Usually, you do a volume, like, for example, the volume on Mumbai that we talked about in our podcast a couple of months ago. Then you recruit authors. It takes a while, and you've got them all together, and then it's published, and it's over. But here it's an ongoing process. So we envision to continue for maybe 3 to 4 years until we have the sufficient number of articles in, and then print them as to have the volumes and close books, as it were. If we feel that we've covered the ground sufficiently, and the publisher, De Gruyter, still wants to keep working with us. The fascinating thing that happens here is that this takes an entirely new dynamics. You're all the time faced with delays, right, by authors when you edit a volume. In this case, this isn't really that much of a problem, because then this article will come next year. Or, as mentioned before, we are sometimes approached by authors who have read an entry or checked up the database and felt that, oh, wow, there is something that resonates with my interests. And then we discuss whether our interests and agendas converge in such a manner that it makes sense to create a new entrance, even though that was not on the original list. And this mainly happens for the themes list, but also for the other two, because sometimes you really weren't sure whether you find a good author or whether the case was really worth it, and then you get an author who is very confident and wants to do it. So this emerging dimension is something that I have come to appreciate a lot. And people, or when we recruit authors, we also recommend them to read some of the articles that are already published. So it gives them something like a template and a much better understanding of the kind of article we envision. And since we've published our conceptual perspectives piece early in the process, this also often serves as a kind of reference point, so that this is like a kind of growing network. This is a very interesting process that I haven't experienced before in my editorial pursuits.
And I think that's a really fascinating point, and it is it's a unique enterprise, in many ways. I mean, in many ways, it's a peer-reviewed scholarly enterprise, and it's open access. But there's a dynamism and a responsiveness at play that doesn't typify most academic projects, insofar as it's really responding to trends of culture and society and history and where we are, where we're located. And it's also it also invites contributors and future contributors to respond to what's already been said. And I don't get too nerdy on the podcast, but in the back of my brain, I was thinking to myself, laughing to myself, that this is a modern scholarly analog to the Puranic process, the process whereby the Puranas were composed. And it took us 150 years to realize that the polyvocality is a feature, not a bug, that people would come along and write and rewrite tales and add and contribute sort of in a hive mind over a long period of time, attentive to what came before, but clearly the work of many hands, but attentive to the overall corpus. And it was nerding out in the back of my brain that, no, this is probably what happened with the Puranas.
You just exposed our secret model of work.
No, I think what I exposed is the compositional strategies of the Puranas that we're still arguing over as Puranic scholars, but here we are. One of the questions that was on the list, I have a list. I don't always use a list, but I have a list. Is regarding the whole enterprise conceptualization of religious minorities as conceived, does that pertain to a particular context, culture, nation? You know, how is that conceived, do you feel?
Alex, you want to make a start?
I can try, right? You're not really posing here the most easy question, but we'll try. What actually the whole setup of the whole project is, as if you look at the website, is to go as broad as possible culture-wise. We also dive down in history, and now we have reached already the Middle Ages, but we'd love to go further. So one of the what we're doing is not to stick to a particular culture, and we do get reactions, for instance, of a potential peer review who said, well, in Islamic legal tradition, you don't have such thing as religious minorities. And sometimes you speak to people who are from what we think or what we would say are religious minorities, like, we're not religious minorities because it doesn't fit us. So we're absolutely not beholden to a specific context. We have been problematizing as much as possible. At the same time, we're not trying to be deconstructionist and say, well, we are not allowed to use such a word. So we use it as an analytical term. As if you read the conceptual article, there's lots of other terms that come along with it. And we love just to think with it, to play around with it.
If I can add something to this, because I'm now trying to work on on one of the article for Japan with a co-author. And one of our first question that we're asking ourselves is, does the concept of religious minority work at all in the Japanese context? Can it be applied or not? But then it's not that much the definition of the of religious minority that I think we're interested in with this project, but this process of minoritization. So what does this make a religion, a community, a minority, and what are the process, and what is also then the internal other related process, which can be legal aspect or minority inside minority or relationship with what is the perceived majority, but also why some group in a context where a legal definition of religion minority doesn't exist are still marginalized or in a minority position, and why is this? What are the characteristics? What are the historical context that led to this? So I think there is all these processes that we are interested in different contexts, which then of course bring in it politics, laws, and definition of religion, of course, in different contexts.
Right. So one angle that we, for example, keep on exploring since Erica mentioned minoritization is that we sometimes imagine a religious minority as something like a robust, cohesive, static group that fights against outsiders or seeks to affirm its practices and survival. But what we find is that even within most religious minorities, processes of minoritization and majoritization are going on, and that we find minorities within minorities, and that all the intersectional questions like race, gender, they keep on reoccurring and reappearing in these contexts. So, for example, you have a racial or a caste-wise minority still within a religious minority. When I, for example, worked on the article on discrimination, it occurred to me that we usually tend to think of this exclusively as the group or members of the group in their capacity of their religious adherence are being discriminated. But we have very little literature actually about or systematic about discrimination within religious minorities, which is far from uncommon, or also between religious minorities. So this is an entire field with constantly shifting borders and signposts that we are exploring. So it's kind of a yeah, it's something like an aquatic thing. When you throw something in, then suddenly things start to move and float in all sorts of different directions.
Well, certainly ripples will ensue. Some anticipated and some not. I mean, there's a particular dynamic quality to this project that I mentioned earlier. It's atypical but refreshing in that. It's always refreshing to expand or even break ground in terms of a new subfield or line of theorization, but to do so collaboratively in a networked way. To my mind, the methodology, the networked responsive methodology, quite befits the subject of study, because what you're studying is something akin to the process of the response, the network response whereby you're studying it. So you mentioned this in passing, but just to be clear for listeners who might have this question, when we think of, or when we're studying, quote unquote, religious minorities, we're not necessarily thinking of a particular context, correct? Be it North America, be it Europe, be it, let's just make this crystal clear for listeners. I don't want to put words in your mouth, so maybe you can answer.
Yeah, right. And yeah, as I mentioned, we have this section where we cover different countries. This section will, in the end, hopefully cover around 15 countries, which we have selected. So this already shows you that this is we are envisioning this as not Eurocentric or Western specific. Indeed, similar to the concept of religion that has kind of migrated throughout the globe, also religious minorities, because of developments in international politics has become current in several all throughout the world, we may say. As Erica was explaining regarding the work on the chapter on Japan, we always encourage authors to start thinking, does such a thing, that such a concept at all exist in the country that you are studying, or has it been Imported? Has it been appropriated? Has it been changed when being adopted? Does it have a specific shading in different countries? So it's not at all limited to certain parts of the world.
One of the things that I enjoy most of working on this project, aside, of course, from working with Erica and Michael, is that you come often to the study of religious minorities with a specific perspective of the Western nation state, in which religious minorities are a numerical minority, usually either sometimes indigenous, but usually of immigrants that need to be protected. And if you study it in very different contexts, you get entirely different setups of what could be minorities. For instance, what I find really interesting is empires in which minorities are often important for the empire to the rulers of the empire to survive different relations between minorities in different countries. So it really opens up very different ways of thinking about what could be minorities or whether we should talk at all about minorities.
Fascinating. Yeah, please go ahead, Erica.
I think another point related to that is not just geographical or looking at this geography in a wider geographical context or across different tradition, but it's also keeping in mind the historical aspect as well. The fact that religious minorities is dynamics and is changing. So the status of a religious dynamic is minorities is not fixed in time. There have been communities that were majority and then they became minority or vice versa, or they are minority in one context and not in another. So we are also quite interesting to look at at these dynamics. So when we invite in particular contributors to the team session, we invite them to try to bring in examples from different contexts. So to use to discuss the topic, but try to and it's quite challenging because as Michael was saying before, we tend to or Alex, we tend to specialize more in one specific context or one specific tradition. So we are asking quite a lot from our contributor. But the idea is exactly that to look at the process, to look at the dynamic, and we of course we invite the author to challenge the concept itself. So to see whether it works or how it interacts with other terminology used in the context, like can be in the context of Japan, the so-called new religion is one of the concepts that is sometimes overlapping, but not necessarily always overlapping with something that is can be close to a religious minority. Etc. So that's I think that the both the historical aspect is also something that we value quite a lot for this project.
Maybe we can even give an example. So we have an article on migration, diaspora minorities. So one would expect the focus on Europe with its immigrant communities today. But actually, the article we have was written by two specialists on early modern. The early modern Europe. So this gives an excellently different perspective from and of course the present is always there in the article, but it gives a different perspective of how states and how continents deal with or how minorities actually deal with continents and different national situations.
Yeah, that's really rich. Is there anything about this project overall, whether content-wise or process-wise, that surprised you or that you found most remarkable or impactful? What stands out to you about this enterprise?
Well, for me, it's a bit what Michael was saying before. And of course, I always enjoyed collaborative work. It's something I really enjoyed. And I think that in this project, I think the collaboration is really working well. But what is surprising, I think, that there is it's more and more interest from the authors. So I think that when we discuss with the author, it's easier for us now to explain what is our conceptual framework for the project. But also, I think the most surprising is also all this new aspect or new team that we didn't think about at the beginning. And then in our discussion, we can say, oh, but it will be very, very interesting to have an entry on this. And the flexibility of this structure allows that it would have been possible with a more structured, a more kind of standard edited volume. So I think this possibility of adding things that we didn't really think about. So that's probably one of the aspects that is more surprising, but there is some more, I think, keep the interest in going, because I think we all been part of edited project. After a while, you just want to finish it. And I think for me, this is a project that I'm still very interested in continuous. I think there is always something new arriving that is quite surprising, that I haven't reached yet to the moment where I just think, okay, that's done. Let's just publish it and move on into something else.
One of my motivations of the project was to be continually surprised. And you get this.
Excellent. So
Yeah,
you'll not
and
be bored anytime soon.
right. I might also add that what is I think a nice twist here is that religious minority seems like such an obvious thing. And then it gets all of these different aspects, and it gets suddenly so questionable, and you see that the concept has been instrumentalized, has been challenged. The religious status of groups has been denied. For example, they are not religions at all. It's this kind of that you see this abyss constantly opening up once you scratch a little bit on the surface, and it's also this nice interface between an academic discourse. So we are have all our authors are academics, but at the same time we feel that for this project we are not just writing for our colleagues or our students, but that the actual audience is very very widely faceted. This is also kind of an editorial challenge, of course, because you need authors to write in a way that is readable also to non-specialists. I hope and I think that so far we have managed to situate the project on in this kind of tiny borderland between different audiences.
That there, what you said, is precisely the impetus behind New Books Network in general, and certainly what I strive to do with this channel in particular, which is bridging, not sacrificing one for the other, but finding a space whereby the fruits of scholarly labor may be received and understood and appreciated by those who are interested. Many of whom will be university educated, but they may be educated in a completely different field. They might be interested in all things Indic for whatever reason, or they might be interested in narrative, or they might be interested in sociological issues, or certainly there'll be those out there who are interested in activism and may want to ground some of their discourse in proper scholarship. And in this day and age where misinformation abounds, really, people are going one of two ways, either being less discerning or being more vigilant and more discerning and really valuing the credibility of the source material. So yeah, that's part of why this project is so exciting, because it doesn't just, it does what the network itself does, which is rendering accessible the fruits of our scholarly labor. Is there anything else about the project that you would like to touch on or talk about? Any dimension, any thoughts?
Well, actually, I'm quite grateful for you, Raj, to bring up the question, what should people do who feel like authoring? Yeah, get in touch. So that's basically kind of what we were talking about now. So as the project is as the dynamic as it is, please don't hesitate to get in touch and come with input, even if you yourself maybe are not considering to author something. But if you feel, wow, such a project should have an article on this or that, I would love to read on this or that. This might actually be a very inspiring feedback.
There's also something that we haven't mentioned, that we have a fourth section, the miscellaneous section, which is maybe a bit of a misnomer, but there we have placed for a different type of articles that also fit with the fast open access publication. Namely, it can refer to more current events. So the main articles are written maybe not with eternity in mind, but at least with don't refer to the events of this month as something extremely important while we have forgotten it next year. But some more timely issues or issues that are more focused or refer to specific resources that might be interesting. So that might be also important for people who want to contact us to orient themselves at this specific section.
And just a final note on this, because of the flexibility of the open access structure, we have two uploads per year. So we usually can have a relatively quick publication process, depending, of course, on the author and on the reviewers. But so far, we can usually compare into edited volume or even journal article, our process is much quicker, which we thought also was very important, especially if we wanted to involve early career scholars that have pressure to have, they cannot wait years for their publication to be out. So this, I think, is another important aspect for potential contributor that the process is quite quick. Because of the flexibility of the structure. But still we have, peer review process, so that there might be some time for delay about due to the peer review and then revision. But it's relatively quicker comparing to other publications.
Fantastic. So those listening, if you're all interested in discourse surrounding religious minorities, click on the link in the podcast notes and you'll have access to it instantly. And for those who are perhaps scholars in the field, grad students, those thinking about these things, perhaps involved in policy, who knows? You have ideas that may perhaps shape this project in terms of what's on your wish list or some sort of response, the feedback pertaining to some of the articles. By all means, get in touch with the editors. Editors, all three, thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, until next time, keep well, keep listening, keep reading, and keep contemplating what this thing is called a religious minority. Does it exist? Doesn't it? And how do we define it? Bye for now.